From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In his State of the Union address, President Obama said, "Let's raise the high school dropout age to 18. No more 16 and gone. American kids need a full high school education. 21 states already set the dropout age at 18. Does that fix the dropout problem?" This hour On Point, we'll look at the president's call for 18 as the high school dropout age. You can join the conversation. Would 18 help? Is it the right idea? When a kid doesn't want to be in class, doesn't want to do the work, will making them stay in school help them, help the school, help their teachers? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. The president in his State of the Union says, you know, if you keep them in school, they're more likely to walk that stage to graduation. Here he is calling for raising that dropout age in every state to 18.
When students are not allowed to drop out, they do better. So tonight, I am proposing that every state, requires that all students stay in high school until they graduate or turn 18.
Everybody wants students to do better, but what's the way? Joining me now from Princeton, New Jersey, is Cecilia Rouse, professor in the Economics of Education group at Princeton University. From 09 to 11, she served as a member of the President's Council of Economic Advisors. Her op-ed in the New York Times last week was "The True Cost of High School Dropouts." Cecilia, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And with us from Chicago, Peggy Corellis, principal of Team Englewood, a Chicago public high school, started 5 years ago, now has 450 students. The school's population is 99% African-American. 99% of students receive free or reduced-priced lunch. The school's dropout rate is 3%, compared to almost 40% for Chicago public high schools overall. Peggy Corellis, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
We really want to learn from your experience, Peggy, but Cecilia, let me come first to you for the big picture here. What is the cost of dropping out of high school to individual students, to the country these days?
Well, one of the things that we know is that individuals that have higher years of education, so educational attainment is strongly related to doing better as an adult in terms of earning higher earnings, being more likely to participate as a voter. We're going into an election year, so individuals with more years of schooling have higher levels of civic participation, less teen pregnancy, are less likely to participate in crime. And so what we call this the return to education. So we think of education as an investment. So when individuals don't make that investment, when they don't invest in those skills, they don't earn the income that comes with having the higher skills. It means they're less they're going to participate a little less in our society. They're not going to contribute in terms of taxes. They'll be more likely to draw on our welfare system.
So that's the cost.
So the cost in terms of the individual is in terms of their earnings and in terms of their family formation. And then to society, if you aren't having the earnings, we need to support you. We may be supporting you outside of the criminal justice system, or we may be supporting you inside the criminal justice system. So there were spillovers to the rest of society as well.
You're writing along with Henry Levin that's saying only 7 of 10 ninth graders today will get high school diplomas. That's leaving 3 out of every 10. You write about 80% of white and Asian students graduate from high school. About 55% of blacks and Hispanics graduate from high school. Those are large numbers. Even among whites, Asians, 20% don't do it. Blacks, Hispanics, I guess 45% don't do it. Yet, but I see a number something like 8 or 9% for our dropout rate. I don't understand how those go together, Cecilia.
Well, you know, this is one of the things that actually in the Bush administration, they try to clear up a little bit, is that different states measure what does it mean to graduate from high school. So, and furthermore, individuals, if we start in ninth grade, how many have gotten a diploma by 12th grade? Mm-hmm. And then some people take longer than that. So they may take longer than 4 years. And some people will get a GED. So they'll get an alternative certificate, which may not count as a high school diploma. So sometimes we have to ask, has the individual literally dropped out for how long? And, you know, or did the individual actually get a high school diploma, or did they get another kind of degree?
21 states already have 18 as the dropout age, and yet we've still got this national issue. Is raising the age to 18 really the answer? Would it really help, Cecilia?
Well, I don't think it's the answer in the sense that if the remaining states increase their dropout age to 18, that would mean suddenly we wouldn't have a dropout problem. But I do think it is an interesting step, and I think it's a step that can certainly move the needle. One of the things that we know in our own history in the United States, and also if we look at across countries, is that when states or countries increase the minimum age that individuals need to attain in terms of staying in school, that they're more likely to stay in school. And importantly, they're more likely to earn higher wages as a result. So I think it will certainly move us in the right direction. It's not the entire solution. The president knows it's not the entire solution. But I think it's actually an important one that will – it's really about raising the expectations for our society, for individuals.
Peggy Karelis, you're right in the middle of this with a really admirable track record, though life is not easy there. I mean, your school's still on probation. I saw recently you've got 11% of your students reading at grade level, but only 3% dropout rate compared to 40% for Chicago more widely. What, Peggy, in your experience, what leads young Americans to drop out of high school? What kind of issues?
Well, you're right. It's no piece of cake where I'm at, but, the kids that actually do drop out, they drop out not because they want to or they don't see anything better for themselves. Their lives are just so complicated and there's so many issues going on in their lives that simply coming to school every day is not they can't do it. For for every student it's different. So you can't say, oh, it's always a gang issue or a family issue. There's a lot of different scenarios that come into play. But usually their lives are in such disarray that they literally they can't do it.
Cecilia, think about that. If it's a family issue or a gang issue, what is putting a different number on the dropout, age do? I mean, can it really stand up against those kind of pressures?
Well, I think what we've seen consistently is when states say, okay, students need to stay in school until they're 18, more students do stay in school. But you have to understand states are generous about that. So it's not necessarily a traditional high school that students need to stay in. They can be going to alternative schools, which can be more accommodating in terms of scheduling and addressing the other more complicated lives of these students. So there are other needs with childcare and other support services at the school. And so I completely agree that one can't simply say you must go to school and so they will go. But what states do, I mean, currently all states have a minimum age, even to age 16 is a challenge for some students. And what it means is the school system has to provide the supports in order to make that happen.
Peggy, what kind of support does that mean when you're up against big issues outside of the high school, let alone, I mean, I think I saw somebody from your neck of the woods saying, it tends to be students with poor grades who drop out. If you get up in the A and B range, 90% plus are going to go for their diploma. So it's you got maybe family issues, maybe social gang issues, and then the grade issues. That's a lot to take on, Peggy.
Right. Usually that is exactly what happens. Usually the students who, you can tell in their freshman year they have really poor attendance. They fail some classes. You know, there's a lot of research around kids that fail, that are off track after their freshman year. Their likelihood to graduate, goes down, by four, mm-hmm. 1 out of 4, I think, students that are off track their freshman year. So there's a pattern that starts to develop. Poor attendance. They start to fail. They start to lose hope. So we do a lot of things with our students to try to get them back on track, to engage them in school somehow, to make connections with the family, to provide transportation if that's what they need, and in the forms of bus cards or other things. We also, when the situation gets to, if a student should be a junior, but technically only has enough credits at this point to still be a freshman, we do help place our students in alternative schools where they can take classes a little bit more quickly and still graduate, with their class or mm-hmm. as close as possible. So that is definitely an option that we use. We never say at our school, this kid's 16, so we're just not going to worry about him anymore. We can just let him drop out. That's never been a conversation that we've had or that's, come into play for us.
What about the dropout age in your state? I think Illinois raised it not long ago. Does it make a difference? Are you very aware of when it is? Are the students very aware of what it is when they,
I really don't. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if our dropout age is 16, 17, or 18 because, like I said, that's just not something that I think about as the principal, I'm not going to worry about this child anymore. He's turned 16 and the state says, he can drop out. That's just never something that enters my mind as the principal of the school. My role is always to try to help our students, succeed and to graduate, at whatever it takes. So, when our students do drop out, it's truly because we've lost those students and we can't you know, we can't find them anymore.
Cecilia, I mean, what does it mean in practical terms? If the age is raised, is it just really symbolic? You're saying to the student, well, you hope you won't go? Or if they leave school anyway, they just walk out the door and don't come back? Are there really the resources out there to go out, find them, pick them up, get them in school? Does that turn into a kind of warehousing, Cecilia?
Well, I mean, I don't believe it just turns into a kind of warehousing. And I think that Peggy's school is a great illustration of what a school can do to help students stay engaged and to stay enrolled. Typically, what states will do is they put some responsibility on the parents. So if a child has not been at school for some attendance for some period of time, the state will then start to investigate in terms of, you know, and potentially finding the parents. Mm-hmm. They first work through the schools and they try to develop a plan. If a student starts to have higher rates of absenteeism, so they look like they're going to be at risk of dropping out. And so states do have to employ some resources in order to enforce these laws.
And there's the president saying 18. A lot of states have considered this and rejected it. Who pushes against it, Cecilia?
To tell you the truth, I'm not entirely sure. In New Jersey, for example, we have a compulsory schooling age of 16. And that was put into place in 1914. Mm. So we know that in 1914, we were a more agricultural state. Mm-hmm. And so many students needed to be in school and needed to be home to help on the farm. But that was almost 100 years ago. Our economy has changed dramatically. I would imagine some people argue that the students who are dropping out are not good for the other kids. But evidence suggests that they actually have no negative effect on the earnings of the kids who wouldn't have dropped out either.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about raising the high school dropout age in America to 18. No exceptions anywhere. And asking what that would mean for American education. Cecilia Rouse joins us from Princeton University. She's looked a lot at the cost to individuals and to the country of early dropout from high school education. Peggy Corrales joins us from Chicago, Illinois, principal there of Team Englewood. It's a Chicago public high school, 450 students, a 3% dropout rate, way, way below what is generally the case in Chicago public schools. She's doing something right, and we'll learn more about that. Peggy, Cecilia, we've got a lot of questions and comments from people online, but let's hear right on the air from some first. Desiree in Amherst, Massachusetts. Desiree, thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom. I'm a big fan of the show. I am actually a high school dropout.
Okay.
And I'm in my last semester of my bachelor at UMass Amherst, and I am looking at graduate programs. So
you went from dropout to somehow college student. Good for you, Desiree. Why did you drop out in the first place, and how old were you?
I was right as I turned 16. I dropped out because of family issues, because of being bullied in school. So that's why I have an issue with the age being raised, because for someone like me, when you have an administration who isn't doing too much to make you feel comfortable at school, you know, you really don't have any other option. You don't want to go there.
Right. It just wasn't good for you. How did you turn it around and get a graduate equivalency diploma, a GED?
Yeah, I took my GED. I mean, honestly, I worked for a couple of years, and then I made decisions. Even older than coming out of right out of school, I made decisions as part of the career. I mean, I'm a political science major and international relations student, so it took a lot of time to kind of concentrate on a specific field.
Desiree, big respect to you for your determination to sort of take control of things and to make them work out. And good luck with that college education you're in the midst of now. Peggy Corrales, look at this story. Here's a smart young woman, but it just wasn't the place for her. It wasn't working for her, and she's glad she was able to get out at 16. Would have felt trapped otherwise. You must hear that kind of argument maybe every day, Peggy.
Well, you know, I can really resonate with Desiree's story, and I have heard similar things before. But it's amazing what she's been able to accomplish, even having dropped out at 16 and really pursuing her GED now in college and everything like that. Desiree, I'd give you a ton of credit. As principal, I would If you were my student, I would feel so horrible that I wasn't able to do something at my school to make you more comfortable and fix the situation at my school. So I still think that the administration has responsibility to take every single student's situation really seriously and do what they can to fix that. You know, bullying and all that kind of stuff, it can have really detrimental effects on kids. And so as principal, I would be devastated if you were a student at my school and dropped out simply because you felt so uncomfortable being at school. I do think that there were probably other options for her that maybe were not explored, like, you know, maybe transferring to a different school or, you know, fixing the situation at her home school or possibly even transferring her to a different school where she could have a fresh start. So I think her story is, you know, exceptional in her own personal motivation and will to succeed. But I do think that, you know, there are other options that could have been employed for her, you know, rather than dropping out.
Cecilia, I have a feeling that Peggy may be an exceptional principal anywhere in Chicago, you name it. She'd be devastated if this one student dropped out. But it must be the case, Cecilia, that a lot of principals in schools are not devastated. I mean, if you've got 40% dropout rates, which a lot of our cities have, somebody's just looking at that as a kind of a matter of course, the way it goes, Cecilia.
Well, absolutely. And I actually agree with what the caller said, which was that high school and the organization of high school is not for everybody. I have a family member for whom high school here in Princeton was not working for her. But one of the strengths of our educational system, going K through post-secondary, is we have even post-secondary institutions. Community colleges will often take individuals who either have a GED or have an ability to benefit, and they can stay. They would still be considered in school, and they can continue on and get an education in a different environment. I should also add that almost every state allows for there to be exceptions. So a student may not be in school but gets a GED. They will consider that. If it's for their family reasons, it's really not acceptable for the student to stay in school, they can get a parental exemption. So it does not have to be crafted in a way that the kids are put into school and locked up and they're insisted to stay there until 18. I think the way that most states have adopted this, even if you look at the compulsory schooling age of 16, is that there is some leeway for those exceptional cases.
So a lot of ways to handle this, but the big goal to try and get people, educated to the point that they need to be educated to get to have a decent life, a decent living. Gordon in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Gordon, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. You raised great subjects. My belief is that it's sad that this is a economic issue versus a human rights issue. I really believe that a person 16 with their parents should have the right to choose whether they want to go to school or whether they want to start working.
What about the argument that they're going to be condemned to a life of low wages and frustrated ambition, Gordon?
Well, what about the argument that a person should have a choice in that too? Maybe they want to live a simple life. I come from an area where the Amish moved into my area about 20 years ago. They started moving in. It's an Appalachian area. It's historically been poverty stricken. Now our wealthiest neighbors are Amish kids who were educated to age 15 and learned how to work and started small businesses. Our area, we didn't have stores. We didn't have building supply companies, any of that. Now we have it all because of these young Amish kids.
And they've got a structure that takes them in even if they leave school early and makes them successful. Gordon, let us pick it up. It's an interesting perspective. And coming from Kentucky, which I think is one of the states that once or maybe twice in recent years has rejected in the state legislature a move to raise this dropout age. Cecilia Rouse, you hear the argument there. It's a human rights issue. It's a freedom issue. If you're 16 and you want to be out, who's the government to tell you you shouldn't leave?
Well, I'm very sympathetic to that, and we have compulsory schooling laws, including in Kentucky, to age 16. So the question is, at what age do you believe individuals should have that right? For many individuals, you can't vote until you're 18. There are many things that we decide individuals can't do and they're until they're a certain age. And one of the phenomena that's happened in the United States is individuals are taking longer to become quote-unquote adults in terms of forming families, finding work, completing their schooling. And so – and given that the economic cost of not getting the high school degree on average has increased over the last 100 years when many of these compulsory schooling laws were put into place, I think it's appropriate to reevaluate whether 16 or 17 is the right age. Is 18 the right age? We may be revisiting this in another decade or two and asking if individuals should be staying in school until they're 20. But I recognize the tension. And like I said, almost every state's laws that I've looked at allows for exemptions if individuals make a compelling case.
Well, I want to bring Gordon's observation to you, Peggy, but let me get a call first from Jenna in Trumansburg, New York. Jenna, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Well, what do you know, Jenna?
My opinion is that it should definitely be raised. I dropped out when I was 17, and I, looking back, I'm 23, still fighting the fact that I have a GED, and the fact that I made an immature decision when I was 17 is still affecting me. As much as I've gotten through college, every school I apply to, it's a question that I'm asked every time. And responding to that is really hard to justify something I did, you know, 5 years ago, six years ago, saying that, you know, I made a huge mistake and the GED just doesn't look as good. And as much as people say it won't affect you later in life, it does.
So you feel like it may haunt you for a long time, maybe for life, Jenna.
Yeah, and not like, you know, mentally I'm okay with it. I've made a ton of bad decisions. But when I have to explain to a private school that I am trying to get into so hard why my mistake was made and how it was made and when it was made, it's not justifiable. So it's like I can give excuse after excuse, but in the end I should have stuck it out, really.
So you wish the age would have been higher. When you went in at age 17 and told, I don't know, the high school that you were dropping out, did they try to persuade you to stay, Jenna?
No, not really. Not at all.
How do you figure? Were you trouble for them? Were they just as happy to, you know, see your backside out the door?
No, I was a really good student, actually, and I got really good grades. And I was one class short of graduating, and I would have had to stay another year. And I didn't want to. And instead of just, like, following through and taking one class for one school year, I decided not to, and I just got my GED for one credit.
Jenna, I appreciate your call. Peggy, what would you have told this student one class short of a high school degree and out the door she went?
Well, that's a travesty. In Chicago, we'd be able to have her take, you know, a summer school class or a night school class, and she'd be able to, you know, she would have been able to get her diploma without having to take another full entire year of school. And there's also alternative schools that she could have attended, too, if that were the situation. I don't think she was well advised by her administration as to what her options were. And that's why I do feel that raising the dropout age, it would give us, you know, just another angle to keep working with kids or whatever. And I think it would make a statement. I don't think it's the magic bullet, and I don't think it's going to save all of our kids or anything like that, but I do think it would give us a different angle to work with. Like maybe in Jenna's mind, if she knew it was not, you know, a legal thing to do, maybe that would have persuaded her to do what was necessary, or that the school maybe to you know, help her, you know, take that summer school or night school class or whatever was needed. But you know, I think that she's right that she made an immature decision because she was a kid and didn't think about all the consequences that she would face. And even when we try to explain to students all the consequences that they might face later in life, they don't feel it at that time, you know. So that's why we have to be the ones who know better and advise our students, you know, to do the right thing, because they're teenagers.
I should say, and in your state, Peggy, Illinois, your governor, Pat Quinn, has announced he's preparing to try and line Illinois up with the president's goal of 18 as the dropout age. It's 17 in Illinois now, and he said they're going to try and push for that. He's going to talk about it in his own State of the State address coming up here. What about what Gordon said, Peggy? Look, kids maybe even younger in his community are dropping out. They're Amish. They've got a whole world to sort of pick them up and put them on a track to a fine life, a rich life. What about that example, Peggy, is being held up to say, don't impose a high dropout age on us. These Amish kids do just fine when they go out earlier.
Well, you know, that was a really interesting point that he brought up, being a human rights issue versus an economic issue. But I still think that, you know, even with those children, if they stayed in school longer and got a high school diploma, it certainly wouldn't hurt them, and it could actually open their opportunities later. Maybe they don't always want to stay in that community and do what they're doing, and they want to have some options later that they don't even see, you know, when they're young. So I think that, you know, keeping kids in school is always the right answer. Minimum of a high school diploma. You can't, maybe in that community you can work, but then those kids would have to stay in that community in order to, you know, lead what he said, you know, we're successful lives, which, you know, I don't know.
We've got another high school dropout who's found his own way, joining us right now from Greenbelt, Maryland. Byron Young is with us. He dropped out of Northwestern High School in Hyattsville, Maryland at age 16. That's 10 years ago. Byron, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. How you doing?
We're good. So you may have heard the president's calling for 18 as a dropout age. Would that have helped you 10 years ago, Byron? Would you have stayed in if the legal dropout age had been 18?
Honestly, I probably would not have, due to the fact that I was 16 when it happened. And my situation, I believe I wasn't even thinking about it being 16, you know, at that time. You know, it was just my own decision. It didn't really have anything to do with flaws or anything like that.
You just walked away. When you look back on it, if you could talk to your 16-year-old self now, Byron, what would you tell him?
I would tell him stay in school, no matter what, basically. It would help if the legal weight was 18. Honestly, it would help. I would just say for my situation, it may have been a little different. But I would tell my 16-year-old self today, be better than yourself at 26, basically, you know. Some kind of way to find the happiness there, you know, and just work your way through it. It's only another, you know, year or two left that I had to go. So I should have honestly stuck with it. I would tell myself to stay in there.
You've had 10 years to think about it, Byron. In your experience, in those 10 years since you left high school at 16, can you see that that decision you made then is putting limits on your income, on your career, on your life all these years later?
I would say not necessarily limits, but I've missed some opportunities, you know, as far as going to college and then having my life possibly turn out somewhere different right now, may it be higher or at a lower, you know, rate. I just know I missed opportunities. I wouldn't say, you know, as far as how much money I make, you know, I can't speak on that necessarily.
I know you've put together, you've got, you're a musician, you work in that way, you're a manager at a retail store, you're an administrator with a government contractor now, so you've pieced it together in spite of not having that high school degree, but maybe wish you could have had a little more running room.
Exactly, you know, I would say that, you know, I've made a decent living for myself, but it's basically, you know, it took a lot more work than I would say a probable, you know, college graduate or even a high school graduate would have to go through, you know, to get to where I am now. Yeah.
Byron Young, it's great of you to take the time to join us today. They're from Greenbelt, Maryland, and we really appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Young.
Thank you.
Thank you, Byron. We've got all kinds of comments here. A lot of people want to talk about what goes on in high school and whether it's right for everybody, whether it's the right kind of education. But Cecilia, there's also this strong theme, and here's just one. Greg writes, I've taught some of these students. I guess he means students who, you know, have trouble, may drop out. The problem that they have is that they refuse to buy into the process and insist on disrupting it for everyone else. Is there a cost to the rest of the high school community of keeping young people in there who don't want to be there, Cecilia?
Well, one is when compulsory schooling age has been raised in the past, mm-hmm. What we have found and what researchers have found is that there's actually no negative impact when we look at the earnings of the other students that were in the class or, you know, in the states. So in other words, students who were not directly affected by the compulsory schooling age going up were not negatively affected in terms of their future. The second thing I would add is, it's not necessarily that the students who are compelled to stay in school are going to be exactly in the same classroom as the other students. A lot of them will actually end up in alternative high schools. And also, I think I would argue that
does that
part
mean
of
vocational education, alternative high school, or what is that?
You know, it can be a vocational schooling. It could be the kind of alternative schooling that Peggy was talking about, where the classes are in the evenings or a little bit more online or a little bit more flexible, or they're providing those other kinds of supports. But importantly, we know that there are ways to organize high schools to help kids stay in school and increase the graduation rates. And that's including kids who otherwise would have dropped out.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about raising the high school dropout age to 18. No exceptions anywhere. That's what the president called for in the State of the Union speech address last week. We're asking what that would mean for American education, what you think of the idea. Cecilia Rouse joins us from Princeton University. She's all over this issue, has really paid close attention to the cost to individuals and to the country of not getting that kind of base of education. Peggy Corrales is right in the middle of it. She's principal at Team Englewood, a public high school in Chicago, south side of Chicago. They have a 3% dropout rate compared to nearly 40% for Chicago public schools overall. Something right is going on there, but it's not easy. The school's on probation. 11% of the kids there don't read at grade level. This is tough, but they're doing it. Tom in Waltham, Massachusetts. Tom, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'd just like to bring a point up in the conversation that, you know, myself, I was a very good student, and although I felt miserable in high school, and let that be well known, and that I had other opportunities to go straight to work, the same career I'm currently doing.
Yeah.
Just felt that the education system sort of had a one-way momentum pushing kids towards college as the only solution.
So you felt miserable because it wasn't tailored to you, your interests, your strengths, Tom.
It just wasn't a place where I really felt that I needed to be. I had a very good grasp on where I was going professionally. And
what field did you go into, if I may ask?
I'm in the electrical trade.
Okay, so you're an electrician. Is it working out all right for you? Do you have any regrets?
No, none. It's worked out very well, and I applaud the woman from Chicago and her insistence on the other options that are available. What I wanted to bring up was that many of those options are stigmatized, and they're catered towards maybe those students that are disruptive or have those problems at home or who aren't able to achieve. But there's also another portion of the population who is able and could just be doing something different. And I would love to see the educational system embrace the other possibilities that are out there, whether it's vocational training, allowing students to finish up in college-level classes. I'll take my comments off the air.
Tom, you sound terrific. Great to have you as a fellow citizen and right here on this show. And Peggy, Cecilia, what Tom raises, a lot of people are speaking to here online. You know, Kevin, he writes, forcing some students to spend an initial 2 years sitting in a public school classroom so we can continue to trample on their self-esteem and harp on their apparent shortcomings doesn't seem like a solution. Adam says our curriculum often seems irrelevant to a lot of kids. Here another listener says, you know, we need to look at a system like Germany has, more vocational training for trades, plumbing, HVAC, electricians, masons, mechanics. Is that out there, Cecilia, for students who just aren't on a going to college track and maybe feel beaten up by the system if they're trapped in it?
I think this is an excellent point. And I high schools is the one link when we look at, you know, we focused on pre-K, and I think we know high quality pre-K when we see it, elementary, middle schools. But high schools is the one place where students start to differentiate and they start to have their tastes. And I'm very much in favor of innovation at the high school level and having different flavors of high school. There's some very exciting research that suggests that career academies where high schools mix work-related experiences and with the academic experiences for students, academic learning can be very effective at helping students increase their earnings later in life, mm-hmm. and they go on to be successful adults. If you look at charter schools, a lot of them have themes so that, again, students can be learning more in the context in which they're excited and which engages them more effectively. There's no question that we can't do this as one size fits all. But I think we're getting there. We're starting to see smaller schools have been shown to be much more effective than regular large schools where we're just kind of warehousing students, but where the students aren't just numbers but are known mm-hmm. to the faculty and known to the principals. So I completely agree that we need innovation at the high school level, and I think we'll get there. And I think raising the compulsory schooling age puts it back on society to say we need to make investments in this because we need to make investments in our young people, and it will pay us back in the future.
Let's go to Steve in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Steve, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
A point I wanted to make and the kind of question you're expert on, and you kind of already made the point to a certain degree that you read on the air, was the fact that students who don't want to be there. When I was in school, when my kids were in school, they were disruptive. They took a disproportionate amount of time of the teachers here in a receding economy where class sizes get larger and teachers have less time to spend. I don't want my kids to have their education disrupted by someone who doesn't want to be there. If you don't have extra programs, Botech, that sort of thing, at least we will get them out of the classroom so they won't be disrupting the education of motivated students. And quite frankly, with immigration changes the way they're going right now, jobs at the lower end of the industry, ditches have to be dug. They're going to have to be taken care of by Americans. I'm sorry that someone has to take the lower type of jobs, but they do need to be done.
Steve, we might understand what you mean when it comes to your own kids and their circumstances, but what about for us, as a country? If that's the attitude we take, they're disruptive, get them out of here, it might hurt my kids' education. I get it, you're sort of in your near-term interest, but what about our bigger national interests here?
Well, the bigger national interest, you got to think that it, as education becomes more involved and more high-tech, that takes more diligence in the upper end at high school and college level.
Yep.
We can't have our kids' education being disrupted on a constant basis by behavior problems.
Yeah, Steve, let me pick it up right there. Our time is short, but I really appreciate your call. And Peggy, what are you thinking as you hear that? Now, Cecilia said to us, well, the numbers show that if kids who are in classroom with a disruptive or kids who don't want to be there, their earnings aren't hurt. Well, sometimes numbers don't catch everything, and you hear Steve's concern. Here we are in a global economy. Standards are rising. We need to push our kids up high so they can do all kinds of advanced work in a very competitive global economy. If you've got kids in there who just don't want to be there, they may take the top edge off of students who do want to be there and hit that high bar, Peggy.
Well, I understand what he's saying. As principal, I'm always looking, for what's going to benefit my entire student population. But I also have to look at each individual student. And usually when you have a student who's particularly disruptive, doesn't want to be there, it's for a reason. It's not just because he doesn't want to be there. There's usually, at least in my experience, especially at Team Inglewood, the student is experienced a lot of trauma in his life or is continuing to experience it, and so they're acting out. So part of it is getting to the base of the problem and trying to help that student, or finding a school that's a better fit. So, through the use of our alternative schools and our sometimes vocational schools too, that's the one nice thing about being in a city like Chicago. There are a lot of options for kids. And, half of it is me, my school knowing what, our kids and what they want and how to best meet their needs. But just taking a disruptive kid and being like, look, you're disruptive, you're out because you're, ruining it for the others is not going to work in terms of our country as a whole, because then where are those kids going to go?
What about the parents' role in this? I've got what looks like a former teacher writing into us, says, one morning, this is someone who's been a teacher, I had a parent storm into my classroom and scream that I gave her daughter an F on a test. I ran to the telephone to call the principal so as not to get killed. Okay, but if she had given me time to talk to her, I'd have informed her that her daughter never opened the textbook, cursed at me every day, told me I was racist for insisting that she learn, threw the test back at me. But of course, it's my fault the student got an F. Until we can change parents, we can't repair our public schools. What about that teacher outlook, Peggy? Do your teachers
have
that?
Yeah, that's it. No, well, I don't think so. That's pretty much an extreme example. And I think our parents, when you are able to have, you know, you sit down and have conversations with them and explain to them what their students are or aren't doing, they're almost always really willing to work, you know, and try to help their child. But a lot of times our parents just don't know how to help. And, you know, in a lot of cases, too, we have grandparents raising their children. They're tired. You know, they don't know how to fight the fight. So we don't really have, I mean, that was kind of an extreme situation, and clearly communication should have happened with that parent prior to the test to let the parent know that the student isn't opening their book and isn't doing their work and that kind of thing. And I think that could have been resolved with better, you know, communication. But, you know, I do think that the accountability factor is an interesting one to mention with raising the dropout age, because if you just raise the dropout age, but who's accountable for the kids who don't come then, you know?
Yep.
Is the parent accountable? Is the student accountable? And every situation is different. So you can't just always say it's going to be the parent's fault. A lot of times the parents really want their kids to come to school and they're doing everything that they can, but the student has decided not to come or, you know, to do other things. So I just think that that's a tough issue that will need to be fleshed out a little bit more with the president making this, you know,
this call. Peggy, I was impressed looking into your school's way, just how far you and your teachers are prepared to go to keep kids in class, keep them in school, to achieve that 3% dropout rate. I mean, you really go and get right in their laps at home. The teachers go and staff go right out to their homes if they're not showing up.
They do. And that's what's so great about my school is the people that work with me. And we all have the same philosophy that every single child matters and counts, and that anyone that we lose, we take it personally, and it hurts all of us. So, you know, having my, you know, just creating that, the culture at the school where of family, and, you know, that we're going to work together and work through it, and my teachers do it. I have culture of calm staff, my deans, my support staff, security. We all have the same mission and vision for our students. And I'm not saying it's perfect, because it's not. And we have kids that, you know, drive us crazy until we figure out, you know, what we can do to actually help that child. And sometimes, you know, through maturity, or sometimes through counseling, getting the student counseling and talking, or, you know, redirecting them, you know, a lot of times it helps. It just really helps when you take that personal interest in that child.
Boy, but that requires a kind of commitment on the school's part that is, I'm not sure it's there in every school. Christina in Malden, Massachusetts. Christina, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I find this to be a really interesting and really difficult issue. I'm from Texas originally, where at least at the time when I graduated in 99, there was a mandatory drop age of 18 for attendance. And despite that, my class went from, during my freshman year, 200 students to 100 graduating students senior year.
Wow.
So it seemed pretty evident that that wasn't having an impact. And there were even additional factors, like you had to bring a note to get your driver's license every year until you were 18, showing that you'd been in school for the previous 90 days and so on. So that didn't seem to be working. Something about that wasn't working.
Okay.
But currently, I'm a social worker in Chelsea, and I work primarily in Chelsea, East Boston, Revere kind of area of Boston.
Yep.
And something that concerns me about this potential change is what I see with many of my clients around school issues, the fact that, A, sometimes the school environment just isn't the right fit for them, and, B, what happens for many of them is there are many immigrant families, and a lot of times the students lose school time in the process of moving from one country to another, or because of behavioral and mental health issues. I've worked with students who are 2 to 3 years behind, and the last thing a student wants.
So what's the answer, Christina? What's the answer? What's the answer?
I think there's probably, it's multifaceted. One thing that I think, you know, would set my mind more at ease with the proposal and the change of legislation would be for that age to include GED programs, perhaps, and say a youth needs to be enrolled in some sort of educational program up to the age of 18, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a school, traditional school
in
program.
Sitting in high school. Let us look at that. That's a good point. Cecilia, what about it? I mean, does it really matter if the student stays in a high school? Is a GED really just as good if they'll actually go out and get it, prove that they did the work?
Well, I mean, people who've looked at the value of a GED tend to find that it's not as valuable as a high school diploma. However, every state that I've looked at allows for the GED in place to count for high school graduation in their, in terms of their compulsory schooling ages. So the laws that I've seen are try to accommodate the fact that it's not one size fits all, that alternative programs that seem to be equivalent to high school can count. Homeschooling, for example, that can count towards being in an accredited program or in a high school program. And so they do try to accommodate that the local public high school, traditional high school, may not be quite the right fit. If I might just make one point about the caller who said they're disruptive, we should let them go, is I would say we let them go today and that seems like it's saving us a dollar. But we have to remember that that individual is more likely to commit crimes, which is not going to make others very happy, is more likely to become, is more likely to engage in the criminal justice system, which we will be paying for, and is more likely to rely on public assistance, which we will be paying for.
All those are costs, but the cost he was most focused on was the cost to the students right around this student, maybe his own children, whose education he's concerned may be, impeded by other young people who just don't want to be there.
I completely agree, and I think that Peggy nicely addressed the fact that there are many ways to accommodate students and to address the issues that make them seem that they may not want to be in school. But my point is that his kids, who may then have a more pristine educational experience in high school and go on to college, will then be paying for those dropouts for the rest of their lives as well.
Well, that gets your attention. Peggy, what about the president, it's not a magic wand. I'm sure he would say and know that as well. It's not a magic bullet. But you're trying to create an environment in your school that leads young people to stay in, to want to stay in, to feel cared about. But isn't this ultimately a kind of a bigger issue than just the school? And we've got an entire culture, an entire country that needs to be giving kids the message and, it's important and the way to get an education that's good for them, Peggy.
Well, yes, it is it's a much bigger issue than that. And my school is just, one little school and we're doing everything that we can. But I do feel that, we need some additional support too in terms of accountability. I mean, when we have these conversations with kids or with parents about, all these options that are available to kids, and I completely agree with Cecilia that there are so many different options available to kids if the traditional high school setting isn't working for them for whatever reason. I mean, even homeschooling is an option. So the other caller, I think her name was Desiree, who dropped out and got her, diploma or her GED later. Homeschooling could have been a real option for her so that she didn't have to actually drop out. So I just think that, what's going to come along with this increase in dropout age? Is it going to be increased, support for schools, so we can have more counselors, more social-emotional staff, at our schools to do a lot of this work? I mean, it's very taxing and it's, exhausting, but it's work that has to be done.
Will we put the resources into it, not just put a higher number on the age, on the dropout age? Peggy Corrales, your story in Chicago is inspiring. We know it's not easy. Keep up the good work. We're very grateful
Thank
to you for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Peggy Corrales, principal at Team Englewood on the south side of Chicago, and Cecilia Rouse, professor of education at Princeton University. Thank you so much for joining us today, Cecilia, and for raising this up.
Thank you very much for having me.
Listeners, you've got great stories and great input, and boy, do we appreciate it. We learn a lot from you. Thanks so much for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.